Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5225, Hornbeck Offshore Transportation, LLC, Appellant versus United States of America. Mr. Scherer for the appellant, Ms. Foster for the appellee.
Good morning. This is another case in which the government is seeking non-statutory exceptions to liability under the Federal Tort Claims Act. The novelty here is that the government no longer defends the specific theories that it persuaded the district court to adopt. But nevertheless, I'd like to briefly explain first why the district court's bases for dismissing our tort claims at the pleading stage were wrong as a matter of law. Second, why the district court and the government are wrong in assuming that allowing those claims to proceed to discovery means that agencies would inevitably open themselves up to claims under the FTCA anytime they misinterpret a statute. And third,
you're going to have some explaining to do on that one, counsel. I'm really having a hard time seeing why it wouldn't be exactly the precedent we'd be setting if we allowed this to go forward. It seems you're suing them for misinterpreting a statute. And if you can sue them for misinterpreting a statute, why can't somebody else sue any other agency who misses it on interpreting a statute?
Well, let me take that point first, Your Honor, if it's all right.
It's quite all right. Yeah.
We are not, in fact, suing them for misinterpreting a statute.
I've read the wrong file, but it sure looks to me like you are. If they'd interpreted the statute correctly, you wouldn't have a lawsuit, right?
We don't know that, Your Honor. We
haven't. How would you have a lawsuit if they'd interpreted the statute correctly? You wouldn't have been harmed.
Well, they.
You have a lawsuit precisely because they misinterpreted the statute. Isn't that what it's all about?
If they had applied the statute correctly, that's true. We wouldn't have a lawsuit.
Right. Bingo.
But for all we know, Your Honor, we haven't had discovery yet in this case. And for all we know, the person who was assigned to assign the phase out date, which is the key issue in this particular vessel inspection, for all we know, the person who was assigned to give us the phase out date simply lost the file or made a calculation error or something, and then told the person who wrote the justification, come up with something that sounds good and we'll see if we can defend this.
So we could allow an FTCA action to proceed on the basis of a fishing expedition, which you really have a hard time coming up with an explanation for?
Well, this is not a fishing expedition.
Used to be people brought lawsuits after they knew they had lawsuits, right? After they knew they had a basis for it.
Well,
that still would be a good idea. However, you brought this one because they misinterpreted the statute. If they'd interpreted and applied the statute correctly, you wouldn't have a lawsuit, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, let me go on a slightly different tack and take you back to your first point. As I understand it, it's your burden to convince us that there is a local law analog.
Correct.
And hypothetically, you could say your claim, this is my hypothetical, not your case, that the person who was doing the inspection was drunk on the job.
Right.
All right. And you argue that, as best I understand it, you argue that because the District of Columbia recognizes this general proposition of once you assume to do something, you must do it with reasonable care. How do you respond to the argument then that the statute that's at issue, this Oil Protection Act,
right,
was never designed to provide you or your client any protection? That's not what the statute is all about. It's talking about protecting the environment, and some of the ways we're going to do this is by retiring some of these non-double hull vessels. Well, what's your response there? And what I'm thinking of is Indian Towing and mm-hmm. Olson, where we look to the statute to try to figure out whether Congress could have contemplated that it intended the United States to be held liable for this type of claim?
There's no question that the Oil Pollution Act was designed in substantial part to protect the environment and to protect people from environmental catastrophes. But at the same time, the phase-out dates that were established in the Oil Pollution Act represented a balance of interests between vessel owners and the other policy interests that the government was pursuing in that action. And so certainly there was a measure of protection for vessel owners when Congress decided we're going to allow these single-hulled vessels to remain in place, to remain in service until 2015. In fact, our negligence claim, as Your Honor suggested, is firmly rooted in the negligent undertaking doctrine that was first articulated by the New York Court of Appeals in Glanzer, and then later adopted in a number of decisions by the D.C. courts, which we cite in our briefs.
What I'm getting at, in those cases, the D.C. cases as I read them, the claim was coming under a statute where it was clear that the plaintiff was an intended, if I can put it this way, beneficiary. And at best, you have this notion that, well, this Protection Act also offers some protection to the barge owner?
That's true, but in fact, in the two main D.C. cases that we cite, Lish and Romeika, the claim was not based on a statutory cause of action. The claim was based simply on the fact that the defendants in those cases had undertaken to perform a service for a fee. In one case, it was a lawyer who had undertaken to inform a bank about his client's finances. There was no statute that gave the disgruntled bank a cause of action against the lawyer. It was simply based on the general tort duty that one assumes when one undertakes to provide a service, and especially when one does that for a fee. And that's all we're claiming.
Does that have any applicability where the, quote, undertaking of the service is simply the performing of the statutory duty of an agency? I understand you got the Lighthouse case where you had something that goes to a rather direct service, but where you have simply an agency performing its statutory duty, and you're saying, well, they did the statute wrong while they're doing this duty. Does that really come under a subset? I mean, I know you call back to the undertaking in the New York. A subset goes back to the older common law.
Right.
And I don't know of a case that really parallels this one where they say it's undertaking to do something when all you do is have government employees doing what government has to do under their statute.
Well, I think Block versus Neal is a classic example of that. That's the case involving the Farmers Home Administration, in which the employees had a statutory responsibility to carry out certain inspections. They undertook to carry those inspections out, and then they were subjected to liability under the FTCA Act for failing to do that. And the same is true here. The Coast Guard undertook for a fee to provide a service, which was inspecting our vehicles and providing the appropriate certification. It's a service much of which is provided by private entities already. Classification societies and marine surveyors already do much of what the Coast Guard does in providing these inspection services. And the specific decision.
The problem is not with the inspection service. It's with the application of the statute based upon the results of the inspection service. You're not even saying they inspected negligently. They came up with the right number if they had been applying the statute correctly.
Right. They failed to assign.
You don't have a negligent performance of the service. You have a misapplication of the statute that employs the results of that service.
Right. That's correct.
I don't think that's parallel to Block, is it?
I think it is. And if we take their explanation at face value, then, which we haven't been able to test yet, but if we take their explanation at face value.
If immunity means anything, you won't be able to test it. This is a matter of being immune from suit.
Right.
And you won't be able to test it unless you can establish that you would have a right to a lawsuit on this basis, on the basis of the negligence statute.
Right. I understand that, Your Honor. But There's another important principle that's important to remember, and that is that it's the government who challenged the court's jurisdiction over this case, and there's a well-established principle that that jurisdictional facts should be subject to discovery before a case is...
How well-established and broad is that principle, counsel? I've sat on a number of cases where we did not allow jurisdictional discovery, particularly in immunity cases. Usually it's been FSIA, Affirmative Sovereign Immunity Act, mm-hmm. as opposed to FTCA, because we don't often have too much challenge to... I mean, FTCA usually pretty straightforward cases, but there is no universal principle that you get jurisdictional discovery when there are jurisdictional challenges. In FSIA, we have exactly the statement that mm-hmm. for the immunity to mean anything, it has to bar the discovery. That isn't unusual.
Well, let me, if I could, quickly come back and answer the question that you posed earlier, Judge Sintel, which is why the sky will not fall if our claim is allowed to proceed. The FTCA and the law interpreting the FTCA already creates a very powerful sieve that screens out the vast majority of claims that could arise from agency misinterpretations. First, as you know, the statute completely exempts discretionary functions, which would seem to include interpretations that are delegated to the agency to make.
Like this one.
I'm sorry?
Like this one.
Well, the district court found that this was essentially a ministerial decision, that the language of the statute was clear and that there was no discretion.
But that doesn't mean it's not a Chevron statute. It just means we didn't find the ambiguity.
That's right.
It is delegated to the statute, to the agency.
Yes.
It's just that the district court, I think, correctly found that there was not an ambiguity on this point.
Right. My point only is that it is true that the statute was delegated to the agency to interpret and apply, but mm-hmm. they were not delegated discretion in the interpretation of the statute because the language was clear. The FTCA also exempts fiscal operations and claims involving taxes or customs and claims for interference with contract rights. So any interpretations of statutes that arise in those contexts would be off limits. And of course, this court's decision in J.V. Brand takes off the table interpretations that are made in the course of agency rulemaking or quasi...
I'm not sure why J.D. Brands isn't instructive for this case. I understand that you're distinguishing the quasi-legislative function of the agency in the Brands case, but I'm not sure why the quasi-judicial function would be any different in that regard.
Because there were no disputed facts here.
So what? I mean, that's a fact, that there were no disputed facts.
Right.
There was a dispute of law.
Right.
There was a dispute of law, and the agency interpreted the law to go one way, and the court said, no, it's wrong, it goes the other way. But I'm not sure why, as far as the FTCA question and the immunity question, that wouldn't be parallel to the quasi-legislative.
Well, as the quasi-administrative prong of J.V. Brand is typically interpreted, it's typically viewed as applying to fact-finding. Where there are disputed issues of fact, and there was none of that in this case. And of course, under Art Metal, and under the statute itself, there has to be a local law.
That's where it's been applied in the past. Is not a precedent that it doesn't also apply to the quasi-judicial.
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that if you applied the quasi-judicial exception in this case, then it would apply to virtually everything an agency ever does.
I think it might apply to things the agency does in interpreting statutes, and that the world doesn't end there either, can it?
Well,
if you're going to parade horribles, make sure they're really horrible before you parade them.
To the extent that an occasional statutory interpretation case is not screened out in one of the ways that I've just mentioned, that's really an issue for Congress and not the courts. The district court's theories, like the government's new APA preemption argument, would give any agency a get-out-of-jail-free card whenever it simply claims that it acted on the basis of a statutory interpretation. Again, we did not allege that that was the basis for the agency's decision. They asserted that in response in their motion to dismiss, and we've had no opportunity to test it. And that's a blanket exception that has no warrant in the text of either the APA or the FTCA. And as this court reiterated in Jerome Stevens, a court's task in an FTCA exemption case is, quote, limited to identifying those circumstances which are within the words and the reason of the exception, no less and no more. And it follows a fortiori that it's improper to create new exceptions that appear nowhere in the statute.
But if we agree with you, doesn't that take us right back to where this court said we couldn't go in Art Metal? I mean, in other words, that the breach of a federal duty becomes the basis of the FTA suit. FTCA suit.
Well, the Art Metal emphasized that in many cases, the breach of a federal duty can be instructive and can be used to determine whether there's been a breach of another duty.
But only if there is a local law analog, right?
That's right. And the plaintiff in Art Metal did not allege a negligent undertaking theory. That was not part of the complaint and not part of that case. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I think you have 4 seconds left, actually, but we'll give you back a couple of minutes on rebuttal. Hear from the government.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Sydney Foster, and I represent the United States. We believe this case falls under the general rule in Art Metal and JV, that there is no action for quasi-judicial decisions like the one at issue in this case, and at any rate that there is no analog under the Good Samaritan duty. We believe the district court decision is well-reasoned, and if the court has no...
Well, the district court relied on a lot of things that our cases have rejected, though, counsel. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to get you anywhere. You have to deal with whether or not the plaintiff's argument that because the Coast Guard had an obligation to inspect and it charged a fee, that they come within what Congress intended in terms of imposing liability. And we need to be clear exactly what the government's argument is on that. Art Metal, I mean, they've distinguished it in their brief 6 or 7 times. And that's why I kept focusing on the first point about the local analog and how we find it and how we get there.
Importantly here, what is at issue is not an inspection. It's rather a pure and simple question of statutory interpretation. An inspection is an entirely different process under the regulations. Here, all that was at issue was that the plaintiff had received a new measurement and then applied to the agency for a new phase-out date. That's the only process that was going on here. The only decision that the agency was making in this case was a decision about applying the statute to the facts before it. There was no inspection at all. There was no fee.
So are we to read the complaint narrowly? In other words, they make allegations that the agency was acting out of some ulterior motive. Had nothing to do with interpreting the statute.
Right, but I mean, if they had, I mean, clearly, like, if they had interpreted, it's the question about the application of the statute to the facts here, and had they interpreted the statute correctly, then we wouldn't be here, as the counsel noted. So this is, at heart, is a question about how the statute applies, which is simply just a quasi-judicial function that...
But their argument, at least in part, as I understand it, is the agency mouthed interpretation of the statute, but it had an ulterior motive. And I just want to be clear. Take my hypothetical that the allegation is that someone in the agency had it out to get the plaintiff and wasn't going to give him what he was entitled to. Is that the end of the case?
If at heart it's a question about kind of how the statute was applied, even if the theory is
statute are you talking about?
The statute, the OPA. Right. If the theory is that it was not based on statutory interpretation, but rather was that someone had it out, then even in that case, there's no FTCA claims. There's the proper recourse is to go through the APA and find out through the APA process if it was arbitrary and capricious.
Well, our court has made clear that the APA doesn't bar you from subsequently filing a cause of action for damages.
No, it certainly doesn't. But this is certainly not the kind of action that
Congress... But that's the question we have to decide, and I want to know what your analysis is. And I started counsel by saying, well, Indian towing, Olson say, when we're not sure, we should look to the statute that's involved, the OPA, and try to figure out whether Congress could have intended for the United States to be held liable under these circumstances.
Right. I don't think there's any indication in the OPA whatsoever that Congress intended to hold the Coast Guard liable anytime it happened to misinterpret a statute.
See, you want to go back to that, and I'm saying their complaint has another allegation. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I think it's also true that the OPA did not contemplate that the Coast Guard would be liable in tort should its officials have had some nefarious motives and not interpreted the statute, but instead done something else. And I mean, there's no indication in the Oil Pollution Act, certainly, that there was a desire to hold the agency liable in tort. And certainly, there's no way to distinguish. I mean, holding them liable here, saying that the FTCA case could proceed here, would allow FTCA cases to proceed in any agency statutory
interpretation. Well, let me give you a hypothetical. Congress passes a statute saying that there should be lighthouses, all right, in certain types of waters. All right, it doesn't say anything about keeping the lights on or providing any remedy for people who are injured as a result of negligent operation of the lighthouse.
That would be a very different kind of case under the negligent undertaking doctrine, because there Congress would be acting in order to provide a service of warning boat owners and so forth, and they're undertaking a service. They're not engaged in a regulatory effort. Here, the Coast Guard is engaged in a regulatory effort. It's fulfilling its mission to ensure that these non-double-hulled boats are phased out of service. It's not providing some kind of service to the boat owners. It's just simply ensuring that the law is complied with.
So if I'm a barge owner and somebody has it out for me in the agency, the only thing I can do is go get an APA
Correct.
Remedy. And I'm out millions of dollars because the agency had it out for me. And otherwise, I have to go to Congress and get a special statute.
The remedy is through the APA, and APA review is...
Well, the remedy makes me feel good under the APA, but it doesn't give me back my money.
It doesn't give you back your money, but that's the system that Congress has set up. Congress did not want to expose agencies to liability for any time that someone complains about their agency statutory interpretation.
That's your theory. I'm trying to go to this other theory in the complaint, and you won't stick with it, but it's fine if you don't want to, but I just think you have to deal with it.
Suppose there were a willful act on the part of an employee who had it in for the plaintiff here. Would that give an FTCA action?
No, they would not.
Right.
And we know that because...
We know that because what's at issue here is,
No, we're not talking about the issue here. We're talking about the supposition that there was an employee who committed an intentionally wrongful act.
Right.
Would that come within the FTCA?
That would not come within the FTCA unless there is some kind of showing other than what has been shown here. I mean, you can't simply make a showing... That a statute was misinterpreted, and then get an FTCA claim simply from that.
You're wanting to come to grips with my question. Maybe I should ask the other side of the question. But if there were an intentional wrong here, is that an FTCA case?
If there were an intentional wrong, I mean, they're not alleging an intentional wrong here. They're alleging negligence.
They're alleging an and/or that could include just about everything. Enough.
Well,
it's very strange pleading, but. I didn't ask you what they were alleging. I asked you a fairly specific hypothetical, and I'm waiting for an answer.
If they had alleged, which
they may have, an intentional wrong on the part of some employee of the Coast Guard, does that make an FTCA claim?
That may make an FTCA claim. It might be subject to one of the other exceptions
in
the FTCA.
That's sort of what I'm asking you. Would that not come under other exceptions if it were an individual intentional wrongful act?
Right. I believe it would come under some of the other exceptions in the FTCA. If the court has no further questions, then the United States asks this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give them back 2 minutes for rebuttal. We used up most of your time the other time, Mr. Sheriff.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick points. First of all, I appreciate the government's concession that the APA does not bar a subsequent FTCA claim, and the implication of that, we think, should be that a private litigant should not be required to use the APA and to use FOIA as a mechanism for discovery.
Well, assume the government concedes all that. I mean, you still have your burden here.
That's correct, and we believe we met it. For one thing, counsel repeatedly says that all that's at issue here is a misinterpretation of the statute, but we know actually that that's not true because we know the agency actually interpreted and applied the statute correctly in the case of another barge owner, one of our competitors.
I seriously believe we're going to buy the argument that they, just because they interpreted correctly one other time, they didn't interpret it incorrectly this time. We wouldn't get an awful lot of the cases we get if agencies were really that consistent.
We do know that somewhere in the agency somebody understood how the statute was supposed to work.
That doesn't mean that everywhere in the agency everybody understood how the
statute worked. That's true. Indian towing is another example of a Supreme Court case that based FTCA liability not on a specific statute, but on the general doctrine of negligent undertaking, which is the doctrine that we've invoked here. And finally, we think this case is just like Tri-County Hospital and Jerome Stevens, other recent decisions of this court in which the government has tried unsuccessfully to get a non-statutory exception to FTCA liability, and we believe that effort should be rejected here as well. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Now give us a brief recess, please.